So my reading today is from S. Baer Bergman's book, The Nearest Exit May Be Behind You, a series of essays. S. Baer Bergman is a trans man whose life's work is to talk and write about trans issues. So here are his words. I want to talk about what's great about being trans. This is not to say that nothing about it is hard. I've had hard times. We all have. We've all struggled. We've all second and third and eighth guessed ourselves and then finally come at a great cost to a place of feeling confident in our identities, only to have other people start the interrogation all over again. We've all fought with our loved ones. We've all waded through a mountain of paperwork that never does what it's supposed to. We've all felt unsafe. We've all felt out of place. We've all felt confused and frightened. We've all been felt up by airport security at 7 in the morning, been there. We've all handled misunderstandings and mispronouns and mistakes. We've all been laughed at. We've all been asked who we think we are. I think we all know how that goes. Someone looks at you and says sneeringly, "Who do you think you are?" But I'll tell you, we know who we think we are. That's the first great thing about trans folk. We have thought about who we are. We've thought about it a lot. We've thought about our genders and our bodies, but we've also had a lot of other things to think about, haven't we? We examine every action, attitude, gesture, choice of work, or hobby. We also think about how we want to be in the world. We don't follow a path. We forge our own. We have to. And it makes us thoughtful. It makes us all recognize that we do have a choice about most things, that we can define and enact who we think we are. What transpires with trans folk as we grow into ourselves and realize we're not going to follow through the door into manhood or womanhood that someone's holding open for us? We also start to understand that a lot of those doors are optional. We do not have to walk through. We can go around the racism of our childhood or the sexism. We can make different choices about education, about work, about relationships. It's the great fallacy of the family that the progression is known, that the options are limited. But we, as trans folk, do not get caught up in that. We learn early that there is no one right way, that people who try to defend their one right way are scared. We learn that scared people can get mean quickly, and we also learn how not to be afraid of new pathways, even when no one is holding the door open, and the door is heavy. We have to push hard against it or find the secret knock or the hidden latch. Trans folk will open the door to who we are, even when it's difficult, because we do know who we think we are, and this is our strength. So a little bit about me. I am completely unqualified to talk about LGBTQ issues. I am not an LGBTQ person. However, I'm the parent of a young person who's genderqueer and trans. They're in their 20s now, so we've had an interesting journey together, and I've tried to be an ally, and that's what I'm going to speak about today. So my talk is called The Gender Shift, because I think there is a real shift happening in society all around gender, and I'll talk about that next. The world is changing. Gender and sexuality are felt and lived and seen differently than they were in the past, or at least gender and sexuality are being expressed more openly. This requires us to interact in new ways and to be in the world in new ways. So what is changing? And I'm going to give you a bunch of statistics here. A UK survey indicated that one-third of the general population considered themselves to belong to both genders or neither gender, but only one out of 250 marked themselves as other when they were given the option of checking other on a form. In another survey, when asked to rate themselves on a scale between 100% male and 100% female, 20% marked themselves as somewhere in between. 25 to 35% of transgender people identify as non-binary instead of identifying as male or female. About 20% of millennials, that is, people born between about 1981 and 1996, identify as LGBTQ, of which 12% identify as trans or gender nonconforming. As of 2016, fewer than 50% of teens in North America identify as exclusively heterosexual. Between 1990 and 2010, there was a fourfold increase in people reporting to a survey that they've had same-sex sexual activities. Half millennials are open to open relationships, and a survey says 4% of Canadians are in open relationships and 12% would like to be. So if you feel out of the loop and you want to keep up, some gender and sexuality terms that you'll hear more about these days are ace, demisexual, pansexual, and polyamory. So in brief, if you don't know those ones, ace is asexual, or someone who doesn't experience sexual attraction. Demisexual, someone who doesn't experience sexual attraction until they've established an emotional connection with another person, maybe as a result of spending time together, sharing activities, or being friends. Pansexual is someone who is attracted to a person regardless of their gender or sexual identity. And polyamory is having more than one intimate relationship with the full knowledge and consent of everyone involved. So as Unitarian Universalists, we need to show our commitment to diversity and inclusion. And some of these things may be far outside our experience and unrelatable. But on the other hand, we might have kept quiet about how much we do relate to some of these things because we didn't know the words or we didn't know that anyone else thought like us. Who knows what secrets each of us has kept? But what if you want to be more affirming and inclusive and you don't know how? Well, first of all, many of us see ourselves as having a gender that matches the biological sex that we were born into. Once upon a time, you might have thought of yourself as normal or the majority. Well, welcome to being cisgender, also known as being cis or a cis person. When LGBTQ folks talk about cishets, that's many of us, cisgender heterosexuals. Sounds a bit nasty, doesn't it? Like, you cishet, you. But from an LGBTQ point of view, cishet people are the oppressors, and if we want to be allies and advocates and not the bad guys, there are some things we can do. Number one is educate ourselves. We shouldn't rely on LGBTQ folks to answer our questions and educate us. It's downright rude to ask intensely personal questions of someone that we don't know well, and it's tiresome for the respondent to always be teaching and explaining. So I would say, if you have a question, Google it. And if you ever think, oh, I should learn more about that, well, just make a note of your questions and remind yourself so you can look them up later. And number two, don't assume that new people that you meet are cisgender and straight. At the start of my career, whenever a new coworker came on board, we would immediately ask the women, oh, are you married? Do you have kids? And it seems like another era now, like most of us don't do that. As the employer now, I will ask more neutral questions to a new person, like, oh, what neighborhood do you live in? What's your commute like? And I just wait for them to volunteer personal information over time, if they even choose to. Number three, use preferred pronouns. Whenever someone enters a new environment, such as a workplace or here at this church, they might have the opportunity to announce their pronouns on a name tag, an email signature, or by being introduced. Using pronouns on a name tag or an email signature is an inclusive gesture, even if a lot of us use the expected cisgender pronouns. It lets everyone know that you are aware of the pronoun issue and we want to do the right thing. When we introduce someone, it makes a statement, and it's more inclusive if we say, hey, this is Chris, and their pronouns are they and them. So then Chris doesn't have to tell everybody individually. Asking what pronouns do you use is completely acceptable. It's unlike asking, oh, are you a man or a woman? Or even, what are you? Which, unfortunately, people still do get asked. If you can't tell someone's gender, don't use gender pronouns at all. Just use their name until you learn the right pronouns. And why would we even say he, she, or they when we're speaking directly to someone anyway? And I would suggest use the right pronouns when the person isn't there. If you're consistent from the start, we're much less likely to slip up and use the wrong pronouns later. Next, I would say challenge your assumptions. For example, if someone's genderqueer, one assumption might be, well, if they don't want to be viewed as a woman, well, they shouldn't wear makeup and jewelry. Or, if they don't want to be viewed as a man, then they should be clean shaven. It's not someone else's job to make it easy for us to know their gender. They should be free to express their gender as they like. Next, when you talk about gender and sexuality, just make the general assumption that there are people in the room who are LGBTQ or they have loved ones who are. If that's not true in the moment, it will be true sometime in the future. The days of not knowing anyone who's lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, or otherwise queer are long over. Be present at places and events where more LGBTQ folks are present too. It could be the Pride Parade, the Pride Lectures at the library, the Drag Queen Bingo, the Trans Day of Remembrance, at the Glitter Bean Cafe, or a Katie Lang concert. If you're never at LGBTQ events or in LGBTQ spaces, it just takes longer for us to feel comfortable and longer for us to be accepted as welcoming and trusted people. While we are in LGBTQ spaces, it's great to interact with people, to make remarks and start conversations. Now, at that concert, you could say to the person beside you, "Oh, I just love that song." And at an author reading, you could say something like, "Oh, I really like their message about being your true self." Like, affirming what you're hearing helps to build community. But if you're not very sociable, I would say being present is fine. Be a friend. Listen and show interest. If necessary, reserve judgment. If someone opens up to you about their identity, their journey, or their struggles, just be kind and supportive. No one's expecting you to have all the answers. And now that the person is out to you, don't ignore their gender or their sexuality when you meet up with them in the future. You can't unknow what they've told you. It's fine to ask follow-up questions or follow-up remarks to your earlier conversations, inquiring, "Are you feeling better?" or "Are you seeing anyone now?" Next, try to be an ally and an advocate. If someone makes questionable comments about any LGBTQ person or relationship or issue, you can respond with information and kindness. For example, you can help update the use of old words like hermaphrodite and transsexual with newer words like intersex and transgender. If you speak up against LGBTQ jokes and slurs, you'll probably find several others in your group or on your side, and if not, you can still be proud that you spoke up. At school or work, you can advocate for inclusive policies and practices, like eliminating gender boxes on forms and doing away with outdated dress codes. And finally, if you see someone acting as an ally and doing the right things, you can try to do as they do. So you may think all these tips sound suspiciously the same as being courteous and kind and treating people as individuals and standing up to injustice, and you would be right. So, what would it look like if we lived in a world in which all genders and sexualities were valued? Well, for me, sometimes I think I would prefer that gender didn't exist and it wasn't even acknowledged. But that ignores two things. One is that people are oppressed because of their gender or their gender expression, and that has to be acknowledged in order for things to change for the better. The other is that some people really like to celebrate their gender, and my preference wouldn't allow for that. So, really, my view is wrong. It's like saying, "I don't see race, I treat everybody the same." That's also wrong, because it ignores the history of racial discrimination and the remedies that are needed to bring about change. So, in this new world, we wouldn't ask or assume gender. We'd enjoy what we see, and we'd appreciate each person for their unique qualities. We'd appreciate how people present themselves for how they are right now and what they aspire to be. We'd only use language and tone that shows respect for people. We'd educate ourselves, and we'd use our knowledge to show empathy. We'd admit what we didn't know and respond to new ideas by saying, "Oh, tell me about that," or "What does that mean for you?" And most of all, we would accept the many ways of being in oneself, in one's close relationships, and in the wider world. Thank you.